everyone. Thanks for tuning into this week's message. My name is Gregory, and I'm part of the team here at Friends Church. Everything we do around here depends 100% on the generous donations of our local and online communities. That's people just like you who believe that life really is about leaving a positive mark on our world. So if you love what Friends Church is up to, I'd like to encourage you to contribute by going to friendschurch.ca. With that, let's jump into this week's message.
All right, come on in. Come right in. Make yourself at home. Happy that we could join together in this sacred space and enjoy this moment together this morning. If you're new here, just hope you can just sit back and relax and enjoy. Hopefully it's been enjoyable already. If you're not new, hope you can enjoy, relax. I'm Jeff, one of the team here, and we're continuing on our Seven Deadly Sins series. If you've been around this last little bit, we've covered some interesting territory. This morning is on gluttony. How's that for a topic? Leading into the Christmas season. We thought we'd get out in front of this one, right? I have to admit, I've been struggling with this topic since I began researching it. I saw it was on my week one of my topics, and I don't know, I had mixed feelings about it. I began reading, kind of going back and going, okay, so what was behind them listing this as one of the seven deadly sins? What did the early church fathers have to say about this thing? Came across criteria that Pope Gregory, back in the 5th century, developed to determine whether people were actually, in fact, gluttons. He wanted to spell it out. And since then, Thomas Aquinas, he's elaborated on this stuff, but here's 5 criteria he came up with. He said, if a person dips into the pantry, heads to the fridge before supper time, might have a problem. If you decide that Denny's isn't going to work and you make reservations for maybe Charbar or Model Milk or something a little nicer, a little fancier, a little swankier. If you go all Gordon Ramsay on us and you start preparing meals with all your gourmet precision, using all the luxurious sauces and seasonings, we got a problem. If you overload your plate and you exceed recommended calorie intake, 5 alarm bells. And if you allow yourself to get too hungry and then you scarf down your meal too quickly, even if you're not overindulging, but you eat too quickly. Come on, man. I've always struggled to understand why people were so uptight about some of this stuff, like eating and drinking, enjoying some great food and drinks. Well, sure, I've overdone it. I've suffered from the odd turkey coma. I've had the odd Saturday morning where the headache is booming from having overdone it the night before. A little hangover, only once or twice. I get that there are health reasons for some of these things. I think there's some good advice for eating modestly, moderately. But come on, really, what is the harm in creating and eating food and drinks that make our taste buds dance while enjoying special time sitting around the table with family and friends? Come on, really, are we hurting anyone? I think when they drafted up this deadly sin, it's pretty obvious back in the 5th century, life was a lot different, wasn't it? Culture was different. I mentioned in the first week of this series how scholars believe that the popular philosophies of that day really had a heavy influence on how they wrote up these seven deadly sins, how they, what they chose and how they forbid them. I spoke about this dualistic philosophy that was so rampant at that time, proposing a separation between the spiritual world and the physical or the material world. There was a strong belief that anything that was of the physical material world was really non-spiritual. It was actually at war with the spiritual. That included our bodies, along with its passions and its appetites and its desires. This whole thing, these things that we crave, these appetites, they were seen as something that was carnal, that was, they called them of the flesh. They were warring against God, the divine, the sacred, the spiritual. If you wanted to experience God in the spiritual life, you had to deny any kind of natural desire that was emanating from your physical senses. Nothing was to be taken for the sake of pleasure. Week one, we talked about how this affected our views and practices of sexuality. How sex became this dark, evil, sinister thing. Only to be done for procreation. No pleasure in that thing at all. You can see, though, how that likely, this dualistic philosophy invaded the space of food and drink. And things that we enjoyed could be seen as dangerous and damaging, toxic to our spiritual journey. Well, since that time, philosophy has been heavily, that philosophy specifically has been heavily scrutinized. More and more, there are scholars and leaders within, especially the Christian tradition, which I'm more familiar with, that have been acknowledging that our bodies are not, in fact, evil. Perhaps these bodies are the creation of the divine, they would suggest, that were made in the image of God, that the physical world that we see around us is not, in fact, dark and void of God's spirit, but was rather permeated by the divine. That the sacred could be experienced in all parts of our lives. If we looked, if we were open, we could see actually signs of the divine acting, orchestrated beautifully. I mean, you just look out to the mountains and you say, that's dark? That's evil? Come on. That reeks of something sacred and spiritual. That in fact our human physical appetites for sex and thirst and hunger and fun and beauty are actually perhaps important parts of our design. In fact, they were needed perhaps for our own survival. These natural desires and appetites and corresponding experiences could give our lives meaning, greater meaning and fulfillment. They were necessary, a necessary part of being human. So rather than forbidding these desires and things that brought us pleasure, at some point, even those within religious circles started celebrating them, encouraging those things that brought pleasure to us, not as sinful, but as something that was good. So what do we do with gluttony then? Is it a bit of a stretch to call it a deadly sin? Should we just chop it? Let's make this six deadly sins. These are the questions I was asking myself as I started wading through some of this past couple weeks. And I have to say, it didn't take long as I got into the topic to find some stuff that I wasn't expecting. I was hoping actually to be able to dismiss it because I think a lot of stuff that has been called evil shouldn't have been called evil. But within this topic, I found some substance very relevant, perhaps even a bit alarming in my own life. And maybe after I've finished this morning, you'll see what I'm talking about. started with how I define gluttony, or how they've defined it. You know, some definitions are heavily focused on the excess of eating and drinking. But as I poked around more, there is a much wider definition. There are some definitions that leave out food and drinking altogether and just say it's excessive indulgence or consumption. Not necessarily specific to food or booze. Some would say that gluttony happens when you lack moderation or restraint, when you struggle to say no to yourself. These new, wider definitions got my attention. I began to think about all the various things that I have consumed or indulged in excessively. I began thinking about the parts of my life that lacked or presently lack moderation or restraint. I mean, forget food for a second. I know it's not me. Only. But I start thinking about cell phone use. I start thinking about social media consumption. I start thinking about online shopping and consumer goods consumption. I start thinking about prescription drug consumption or just recreational drug consumption. I think about beauty enhancement. Think about just fun and entertainment. I mean, something as simple as just irresponsible Netflix binging. Oh, I got that in spades. Something began to happen as I began to consider all the different ways in our present culture that I could easily find myself or watch others excessively consuming stuff. I thought, okay. It's a thing. But are still wrestling with the question, like, really, what is the harm to a lot of this consumption? You know, sometimes the harm comes in really subtle forms. You know, the more I think about it, really subtle. From the time I was young, I loved a candy called chicken bones. Anyone ever heard of chicken bones? My mom brought some home one time. I was pretty young. But when that thing hit my mouth, it's like orgasmic, man. It was like, what is that, Mom? She said, that's a chicken bone. I said, oh, it has chocolate in it. It's like the cinnamon hard candy, sweet. And then you crack into the middle of it and there's dark chocolate in the middle of it. Oh. Every year or two, my sister Cassandra, knowing how much I loved them as a kid, she would find them. They're hard to find. You can't just pick them up at every store. She'd find them. Maybe she'd be out in Banff. She'd pick up a little bag of them, and she'd drop them off for me. So thoughtful. No one touched my chicken bones, man. I just love those. I'm just like, yeah, no. No one touches these things. I would put that in my mouth and just savor it. It's my 50th birthday recently, and I know you can't believe it. I don't know why I do that. So we had this party, and my sister, bless her heart, I forgot to bring it this morning, but she got me this container, like that, big glass container, full of chicken bones, to the top. I don't even want to know what she spent on that container. So since about the beginning of November, I've been whittling away at that thing. And now it went from this to about there. And I noticed something. I'm not enjoying chicken bones as much anymore. At some point along the way, the joy of reaching into that jar and grabbing some of those and popping into my mouth started becoming less. And then I found myself just kind of going there. Ooh, there's a chicken bone. But then I'd put it in my mouth. And I'm going, you know what? I've had enough of those. I recognize now, even 3 weeks into this beautiful gift, my relationship with chicken bones has changed. It happened with me in golf, too. I got into golf quite late, like as a kid. I was about 14 or 15. Went out with my dad, and like literally in one game, I got hooked. I worked at a couple golf courses in high school. When I was 18, I was finished high school. I even got a membership at a little country course. One summer, I would go to the golf course. I would golf 9 holes. I'd come back quick, get ready, go to work. And then I'd come home after work, scarf down some food, head to the golf course, golf again till it was too dark to golf. And then it was just repeat, repeat, repeat. I'd get to the weekend, 36 holes, like 9 hours on that golf course Saturday, 9 hours on Sunday. And I couldn't get enough. Devouring Golf Digest magazines. What? I mean, just anything I could, or anything golf. It was just, oh, yeah. As we got older, my dad took me to a real golf, out to Kananaskis. Remember the first time I ever walked onto those grounds, saw these perfectly manicured greens and tee boxes, the scenery. I mean, it was so intoxicating. I just, every hole that we finished, I was like, oh no, that means we only have 17 holes left. It was like, oh, savor every moment. I just, oh, yeah. Number of years back, my dad retired. He bought a place down in Phoenix. And he said, Jeff, told my brother-in-law, so he's like, here's the deal. You come down and see me. You just get your butt down here. And I pay for the golf. We'll golf wherever you guys want. I'll pay for it. Just come on down. I remember every year we'd go down 4, 5, 6. And it's like every year we'd say, hey, what do you say we make this a 5-day trip? Dad said, sure, come on down. What do you say we make this a 6-day trip? You know, it's like, come on down. One year we did a 7-day trip, golfed 9 times in 7 days. Every day, and then 2 days we doubled up, 36 holes. Something weird happened on that trip. We got halfway through, back starting to get a little stiff. Of course, this is in the middle of winter down there, but we hadn't been golfing for a little while, but oh, the back's getting sore. All of a sudden, our scores start to, like, it's going in the wrong direction. We went from walking onto these courses. I mean, it's like courses I'd only seen in magazines. It's just, can you believe this, guys? We were taking pictures. Just soaking it all in. We only have 6 days left. Oh, we got to make the most. Partway through the week, things start shifting. Started noticing things that weren't great about this course that we'd heard so much about. Game was off. By the end of the week, I really had had enough. Something shifted. The joy that this game had once brought, all of a sudden it was like, it was so weird. Weird. At some point, it was the law of diminishing returns. You keep going, 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 and then the joy is just there, and all of a sudden, perhaps subtly, it starts plateauing without you noticing, but you keep consuming, keep consuming, and then all of a sudden, the hit that it gives you starts dropping off. And the once excitement that whatever that thing was, once brought you, all of a sudden, it's not there anymore. And pretty soon, it's like sour soothers. When I was introduced to those things, man, I couldn't get enough. And all of a sudden, they burnt the tongue right off me. Man, it was like that citric acid in those sour soothers. You eat too many of those? That's, it seems, what happened with some of these things in my life that once brought so much joy. All of a sudden, and the graph just started going in reverse. How many have ever experienced this concept? Something in your life that you love so, you get enough of that, and all of a sudden you keep going, you keep consuming, and it starts dropping. Too much of anything ends up losing its ability to bring joy. At some point, more stops being better. I'm curious if there was something in your life that you've seen that happen in. What would that be? Would you know? Do things come to your mind? Oh man, it can be food, it could be relationships, time spent with someone. Like, you pick your poison. This seems to work in almost any category. Something else that I stumbled on as I was thinking deeply and reading about gluttony is how it can be used not just to try to find joy, to go and do something that you love, but actually gluttony and the excessive consumption sometimes has very little to do with joy. In fact, it is the overconsumption to hide, to numb, to run, escape from pain. Oh, there's a pile of literature out there talking about this. I don't know if you've ever seen the show The Biggest Loser on TV. I was reminded of this actually online. There's one contestants battle to lose as much weight as they can in this show. It took the world by storm, so inspiring for so many. But there was one contestant, one of the seasons, who described how the physical abuse he experienced throughout his childhood had left him with a desire to somehow shield himself physically and emotionally. You see, his dad was violent, very abusive. And his mom was running scared, so she was never able to protect her son, this guy, from her husband, his dad. So he turned to food to feel bigger, to feel safer, to find comfort. This was not about joy. This was not just about something that he just loved and give him all these warm fuzzies. This was almost a means of survival for him. It became his escape. And as a result, he grew obese. My bet is, and I was thinking about that this week, I would bet that there are probably some who are listening to me right now who have endured or are enduring subtle forms of mistreatment, misattunement, perhaps even abuse. And if you were to spot overconsumption in your life, perhaps, maybe it's shopping, spending, sex, maybe it's booze, maybe it's porn, maybe it's social media. I mean, whatever it is, whatever your thing is, your go-to that you're consuming, that perhaps somehow if you could really dig down and look honestly at it, you might find that there are dark feelings of rejection, perhaps isolation, feeling unseen or unheard by those you love, or those in your life. Or perhaps it's the opposite. Gluttony is connected to some sense of intrusion. Maybe you feel overly controlled by someone in your life. Maybe you feel intimidated. So subconsciously, this excessive consumption, nothing to do with joy, but it's your way of escaping or numbing these feelings that are bubbling below the surface that you may not even be aware of. The massive body of research that's been done to show just how common this is, like it is just everywhere when I'm reading this. What's also scary is how unconscious this goes on. How many people are gorging themselves on stuff, picking their poison. They're gorging themselves, not realizing that it's because of something lying underneath it all. Dark emotions. And this consumption is somehow inoculating them, anesthetizing, killing the pain, making them feel just a little bit better. Let me ask you something. Have you seen that before? It's always easier to see in someone else. Is there someone in your life you've watched them continually in this pattern, this cycle, this rut of going after something? And you look at it and you go, that thing has never satisfied you. You keep going after that thing. What is it? That thing isn't bringing you joy. It's not making you happier. Why are you doing that? And perhaps in a real insightful moment, you could even look at that and go, I know that somehow you're trying to make yourself feel a little bit better running in that direction. It's easy to see out there, not so easy to see in here. You know, if food is your go-to, it can be easier to detect just because you're going to notice maybe you go to put on some clothes and you're going, oh, hey, what the heck is going on? It's a very tangible way of knowing that perhaps something is out of sorts or I'm over-consuming. But with some of these other go-tos, sometimes the consequences, oh man, they are really subtle. They take time to show up. And sometimes their symptoms are showing up, their consequences, but we don't even see what they're connected to. We just know life is getting a little bit messy. You know, if you have a lot of money, you can be spending a lot and really not think that there's a problem. Sex, certain drugs, exercise can be a way of numbing pain. The dark emotions underneath that can be driving our compulsive, excessive consumption, they can fly below the radar, leaving you completely oblivious as to why it is that you feel you need these things so badly. Maybe you're doing this right now. Perhaps it's been so unconscious that you haven't realized or you haven't even taken a moment to think that perhaps something has convinced you, something is making you reach for that thing again and again. It's likely not bringing you a ton of pleasure. But you just keep going back to it. Perhaps it's become your coping mechanism that allows you to stay somewhat functional, helping you take the sting out of some unresolved part of your life. This is sobering, isn't it? Some of you that are in the program, you're in recovery, you know of which I speak. But many, many within our society, and I'm telling you, you're looking at one, can live so unconsciously, not seeing this habitual pattern, compulsive pattern, not realizing that there are reasons that this thing is going down this way. In my research, probably the darkest place that gluttony can lead us to is that point where your excessive consumption begins cannibalizing other important parts of your life. Years ago, I told this story. You know I love golf, but I It was in the fall. The golf season's over. They were announcing this big sale, probably Black Friday sale for all I know. This was years ago. And I wandered into some golf store. And in my head, you know, I was telling myself I need a new driver. Forgive me if you hate golf. Like, really sorry. I'm not really sorry, but you're going to have to put up with this, all right? So I want this new club. And I'm looking around to see what else on sale, and this club that I wanted so badly was on sale. $100 off. I'm like, wow. Think of the money I'm saving by buying this thing. I know you've never thought that. And I'm looking at it. I think it was around $249. I had never spent $249 on one club at that time in my life. And I'm humming and hawing. I pulled it out. I swung. Oh, wow. It's like, you know, it was just, oh, heavenly. I'm like, wow, that would, $249 though. I put that thing back and I just think, no. I start shopping again, just walking around. Just tell me, just window shopping, Jeff. You're just looking. And then I came back to it. I said, you know, Jeff, it's been a long time since you bought anything for yourself. You need to do this. I hunted through the right one, grabbed it, walked to the front of the store, pulled up my credit card, and I bought it. I walked out of that store. I got into the car. It's sitting there right beside me. And I began thinking about how I was going to tell Kathy when I got home. And then this moment happened where I remembered a conversation I had had earlier in the week. I know this was many years ago, but I know it was in October because November is birthday month for our family, four of us. Kathy was planning a birthday party for two of her sons. She was trying to economize by making one big party for two of them. Our kids were young. We didn't have a lot of money. She said, Jeff, I think we should do it at Bonkers. I'm like, oh, Bonkers is this like Chuck E. Cheese thing. He had lots of balls and place to run and play, whatever. They'd hold birthday parties right there. At that time in our lives, we were penny pinching. She says, I think we should do it at Bonkers. I said, well, how much would that cost? She goes, I think it's around, I don't know, $12 a kid or something. I said, well, how many kids are you thinking? She says, well, you know, it's two of them. I think we should have, you know, each of their family and or their each of their friends there. And so I'm thinking, I forget how many, like 12 kids or something. And I'm just doing the math and I'm looking at her going, are you crazy? That would cost like $175. She's like, well, they would love it. I said, Kathy, whatever happened to like wieners, like hot dogs and cake and pin the tail on the donkey? Like, are you kidding me? Like, that is. And she said, fine. We'll have the party at home. So there I'm sitting there staring at this $250 golf club and I'm going, fucking hell, Jarvis, what is your problem? You can say no so easily to them and you can say yes to that. This is the insidious thing about gluttony. This thing turns inward, and before long, it starts cannibalizing other parts of your life. And you can find yourself in one area going, yes, 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 yes. And then the consequences start catching up on these other sides. And you start seeing the way that you're saying no to very important people. Things in your life. And it's only in a very painful, honest moment many don't want to have. If you look at the insidious nature of this, you go, oh, okay, something might be out of control here. There's a insidious, a haunting passage in the Bible. It's the Apostle Paul. He says, so he's talking to some people in Corinthians, in Corinth. And I think he's addressing some gluttonous behavior. He sees some raunchy stuff going down. And he's going, guys, whoa. You got to be careful with this stuff. They come back and they say, hey, look it. There's nothing wrong with this. We can do whatever we want. This isn't illegal. He says, yeah, but not everything is good for you. He says, look at me. I can do anything I want. But he says, I must not become a slave to anything. There is this dark point that we can cross when we're consuming something excessively where it's no longer bringing joy. And you know what? It's no longer even doing a great job at numbing pain. It begins forcing you to say things, say no to things you love, to say yes to it. Things you've always valued. But saying no to it is hard. It becomes this compulsive behavior. It's got its hooks in you, and it's made you its slave. Installed an app on my phone a while back. It comes with it. I didn't even realize it. But it tells you every week how much time you've spent on your phone on average per day. How many know about that? It was horrifying when I saw the amount of time I was spending on this thing. I think about the amount of conversations that I missed out on with my boys, with Kathy, the ability to be present because this thing is sitting in my face. I think maybe perhaps we all have something in our life that we're excessively consuming. And I know I'm not delusional. I don't think that this 30 little minute session will fix all excessive consumption in here. My goal this morning was just to take a spotlight and shine it on the reality that gluttony is a thing. And it can steal our joy. It can take something that was meant to bring such pleasure and ruin it. It can get us into a place where it continually pushes us away from really dealing with the root of our deep sadness, things that are bothering us. And it just keeps pushing us away from dealing with it, postponing the pain, postponing the resolve, and leading us into a darker place. And probably the most insidiously, it takes us to this place where all of a sudden it's made our world small. It's taken the things we love most and put them in this much less important place in our lives. So I'm hoping maybe you could have an honest moment with yourself this week. You could maybe just look carefully how you've spent your money, how you spend your money, how you spend your time, how you spend your energy. Those are three big areas where gluttony can really, I mean, if you're looking carefully at where your time and money is going, or just your energy alone, it can be a haunting exercise. I pray that you would just be honest with yourself, because that's where it starts. The rest, if you're willing to look honestly, your own life, the rest, I mean, it begins to take on, you get traction with these things. As soon as I saw the numbers, I was like, oh, geez, I gotta put that thing down. I gotta turn off the notifications. I gotta get away from it. I don't know what your thing is today, but pray you'll be honest with yourself. We're all done. Gluttony, it's your thing. We'll leave it on the list. Hey? Have a great week, everyone.